Thank you, Dimitri. And my thanks to the organizers for allowing me to speak and for inviting me to Fields. It's, as the previous speaker said, it's a lot more fun to be here. I'm a department head, so it's a lot more fun to be here. So I'm going to talk about a question about the representation theory of string C groups. I have to admit I'm not a geometer. I'm a representation theorist, and I study Schur indices of groups and other sorts of algebras. So let's see. Oh, I got the wrong one. Okay, so let me tell you what Schur indices are. In representation theory over non-algebraically closed fields, usually we work, if we're working in characteristic zero, we work over subfields of C just to for the more interesting aspects. So if you have a semi-simple finite dimensional algebra over this field F, it will, by Art and Wedderburn theory, it will break up as this, a direct sum of simple algebras, which have to be semi-simple, well, simple algebras that have to be finite dimensional, therefore they're Artinian, and therefore they have to be matrix rings. So I've got this, this button works. So this R chi is some matrix dimension over a division algebra, which I index by chi. And chi is going to run over the Galois-Kochetsky classes over F of the irreducible characters of the complexified algebra. Okay, and the division algebra, this d chi, in Art and Wedderburn theory is the centralizer of the image of A in the module that's supported by your character. And the center of this division algebra is the field of character values in characteristic zero. That comes from separability properties. And this Schur index that we're interested in is the square root of the dimension of the division algebra you're looking at over its center. So in general, the division algebra that you have over F will have dimension which is the dimension of F chi over F multiplied by the square of this Schur index. And so when you have a non-trivial division algebra occurring, the Schur index is more than one. If the Schur index is one, then your representation is being realized over the field of character values. Okay, so what's that got to do with you? Real Schur indices for, the only division algebras you can have to be either the real numbers or the complex numbers, if the field of character values is complex, has an imaginary value, or the four-dimensional quaternion algebra, which I've got here as H. And when you're so that works for any semi-simple algebra, but when you have a group algebra, it has a nice duality, has nice involution, and when you have an algebra with a nice involution, then you have a way to get at the division algebra and find out what it is using something called the Frobenius-Schur indicator. So that's this FS chi that I've got in my abstract. And the three cases have names. When the division algebra is the reals, so in that case, remember the semi-simple component that your semi-simple component you're looking at with respective chi is a matrix ring over the reals. Okay, this is just the centralizer algebra. And we call that an orthogonal representation, and it has real Schur index 1, because this is not a non-trivial division algebra. When the Frobenius Schur indicator is 0, then you have the complex numbers appearing, so it's an imaginary representation, but it still has real Schur index 1. There's no non-abelian or non-commutative division algebra occurring. And the non-commutative division algebra of the reals occurs when you have real Schur index 2 and Frobenius Schur indicator negative 1. There are no other possibilities for groups. These are the only values of the Frobenius Schur indicator, the only ones it can take. Okay, so you have this nice, convenient way to figure out when you have a division algebra or some extra character values over your real field. Okay, now I have here the definition of abstract polytopes, which we've seen many times. So it's the same, I think, as what was talked about yesterday. The only new thing I've got here, I don't think we discussed diagonals. So faces incident to your minimal face are your vertices of your polytope, your abstract polytope, and the vertices, set of vertices I'll call P0. If you have a pair of them, then it's called the diagonal of the polytope. So this is something that is in McMulton and Shilley's book, I think, in Chapter 5. Most of this stuff is in Chapter 5, what's relevant here. If you have a regular polytope, then it acts transitively on flags, and the automorphism group of the polytope, which is this incidence-preserving permutation group on the faces, is a string C group. So it's a image. Unfortunately, I don't have any pictures. So this is my Coxeter group, where you'd have n dots, and the edges are labeled with those m1 through n minus one numbers. And the generators are row 0 through row n minus 1. Okay, so exactly as we saw yesterday. The characterization of the string C groups, then, is the finite homomorphic images of string Coxeter groups where you have this intersection property being satisfied. There is other definitions for when that's not satisfied, and McMullen calls them pre-polytopal. From Marston's talk yesterday, there's even something in between where you have regular maps which may not be deriving polytopes, and we'll see some aspects of that later on in our examples. Now, McMullen's work, most of this has appeared in as I said, on realizations in the Chapter 5 of McMullen Schulte's book. So you start with a regular polytope and give it to your distinguished involutory generating set, row 0 through row n minus 1, and pick your stabilizer, gamma 0. So gamma is the automorphism group. Gamma 0 is the stabilizer of F0 in the base flag. Realization of the polytope is a Euclidean, is a representation of your vertex set into a Euclidean space, where the elements of the automorphism group are realized as isometries. And what McMullen was interested in was that the congruence classes of realizations of these realizations of the polytope, representation of this group, form a convex cone whose dimension is the number of congruence classes that have diagonals under the action of the automorphism group. And what's interesting, and where a lot of the group theory comes in, is that McMullen had formulas in terms of pairs of double coset of gamma 0 in gamma, and the inverse double coset for the dimension of the convex cone of realizations, and the simplex realization, which is somehow the most generic one, is just the number of double cosets. He also showed that every realization decomposes as a sum of pure realizations, which are each associated to a single irreducible character of gamma. Okay. Now, he also gave character theoretic formulas for these things in terms of the real irreducible representation, but they had to be revised later on by Monson, and a paper of Monson and McMullen revised them when it was taken into account that the division algebra centralizer, which could be the complex numbers or this quaternion algebra, has to be taken into account. Okay. Now, later on, if I have time, I'll talk a little bit more about that. But so there's an issue with when you have the complex numbers or the quaternions showing up. In their paper, they found an example of this 5-5-5, which gives you an imaginary character value. So that's an imaginary but sure index 1. And there's quite a few more examples. By the way, this group is SL211. Okay? So it's the sure indices were known because those groups have been classified. Now, we didn't find, Monson didn't find any with sure index negative 1, and so that's the question that he asked me. If you have a string C group and an irreducible module for its group algebra, can you get a quaternion algebra as this centralizer. So in other words, can you get Frobenius shear indicator negative 1, a symplectic case? Or is it the case that all of these have real shear index 1? That's still open. That was about 8 years ago, I think, that he asked me that. Now, what's known about this? So after Barry asked me this question, I did quite a bit of literature searching, thinking that, gosh, this is a question that you can solve in 5 minutes, okay, if you just find the right example. Well, vial groups were known to have rational shear index 1. So that means that they're realized over the rationals, actually. They're realized over their fields of character values. And if you have rational shear index 1, you have to have real shear index 1. Where the rational shear index comes from are all of the completions of the rational. So you have the real completion, which is at the prime at infinity, and then you have all of the p-adic completions, okay, at every prime ideal of the ring of integers of the field of character values. So it's not just the integer primes you have to deal with. You have to deal with all of the primes in those rings of integers in the field of character values. But if you have rational shear index 1, it forces all of them to be 1. Okay? Because the rational shear index is the least common multiple of all these p-adic and real shear indices. For Coxeter groups, so finite groups that are generated by reflections, all of them have real shear index 1. That was eventually proved by Benson and Grove in about 1974. But there is an example with rational shear index 2, and it's the two-adic and three-adic indices of this non-parabolic irreducible character of type H4. It's the only non-parabolic character among the finite Coxeter groups. I asked this question to Michelle Bruet at the Coxeter Legacy meeting in 2003, and he said, well, he's been working on unitary reflection groups, and he says there's finitely many examples that he knows of with real shear index 2, and it turns out that there's actually quite a few. There's 24. There aren't that many finite irreducible reflection groups, period. So this is about half of the ones in his list, actually, in Shepherd and Todd's list. And here's this is my attempt at a picture. So this is a string where you have a dot. The dot represents an element of order 3, another dot representing an element of order 3, and an edge labeled 3 between them. Okay, so you can see what these are. So most of these string unitary reflection groups do have characters with real shear index 2. And it turns out that as soon as you abandon the idea that your group is generated by reflections, there's good reasons to expect that you get some characters that are symplectic. Okay. So if you're looking for an example, this is probably my most interesting slide. The rational shear indices of SLNQ. So this SL211 example that Barry had found, you can ask, well, what about all the SLNs? And there's quite a few that have shear index 2, actually. Any of the ones that have shear index 2, I haven't been able to show they are string C. So some of these examples with real shear index 2 are trivial on the central involution. So they're actually characters for this simple group PSLNQ. The ones that have shear index 2, Turrell has a nice formula when they have real shear index 2. There's a relationship between N and Q, and N should be odd. Okay, so PSL2Q, they're all 1. Okay, but there's an infinite number of examples where N is odd, and it can be either congruent to 1 or negative 1 mod 4. At the BIRST meeting in, I think it was 2004, I'm not sure about the year, I talked about this, and immediately after my talk, Michael Hartley and I went to his computer, and I looked over his shoulder, and so I can say that we calculated the Frobenius shear indicators for all the string C groups in the atlas of regular polytopes. So if the order of gamma is up to 200, the real shear indices are all 1. And GAP can run that program in about 10 minutes, now probably even in 5. So Michael knew exactly how to do that. So the next place you look would be in for large groups that are generated by involutions. And the natural place to look for those is non-abelian simple groups, because they are generated by involutions when they have the theory of even order. Okay. Well, sure indices of the finite simple groups are known for quite a few of the classical families. The only one that's still open is PSU2NQ squared. I don't think there's any condition on Q squared. I think all of these are pretty much open, unless they're really small. And most families of simple groups of Lie type. The problem with the simple groups of Lie type is just, you know, to construct all the characters of an infinite family is hard. Okay, so you don't know what the character values are. The only known real examples with sure index 2 occur for two characters of the sporadic group, the McLaughlin group. But we saw, we had a, well, it was a little tit-tat yet last night when Marston's talked about which of the sporadic groups are polytopal, and this one is not. It's not a straight C group. Well, you can talk about that later. And as I said before, some cases of PSLNQ with N odd. And we also know what that there are real sure index 2 examples occurring for any of these groups of Lie type for the cuspidal unipotent character. It's actually unique in these cases. So it's twisted AN plus 1Q for all Q but some N. There's a little condition on N there. Twisted F42 to the odd power. All of those have a character with real sure index 2. And twisted E6Q for some Q is condition on Q. So there's lots of simple groups with characters of real sure index 2, but we don't know that they're string C. Okay. That hasn't been dealt with. Okay. And I say here, that's one question that might be interesting for people in the audience, to find string C characterizations of just some of the small simple groups of Lie type. Okay. Some related problems. These are some of the things I'm looking at now in this direction. So in 2005, Pham Hu Thiep, who's one of the leaders in the among the group that's studying finite simple groups, he asked, if you have a finite simple group G, and every element is strongly real, that is, it's conjugate to its inverse via an involution, then is G totally orthogonal? And that's the case when all of the characters are orthogonal. The answer to this is no, actually, when the finite group is not simple, but the only published counterexample that everyone uses for this is a group of order 32. Okay. And it's the only one of order less than 64 which has this property. It's sort of an obscure little group. So modulo a few exceptions, the answer to this might be true. It is true that totally orthogonal groups are always generated by involutions. Okay. You can use character theory to prove that. Another interesting angle for me is an interesting result of Guralnik and Montgomery about Hopf algebras. So Hopf algebras are another algebra that has a nice involution. And you can use that to define a function that plays the role of the Frobenius sure indicator. If you take a finite group G and you look at its Drinfeld double, so this is a sort of modification of its group algebra as a Hopf algebra, and you calculate this Drinfeld double and you ask, well, when is it totally orthogonal? Okay. The condition for reflection, which is powerful for reflection groups, is that all of the normalizers and centralizers of elements in the original group, of single elements, should have the property. So they should be totally orthogonal, or they should have real sure index 1, so no symplectic characters. And so for reflection groups, that's interesting, because there's also another sort of karma in the discipline that says if something is true for the normalizers and centralizers of elements in reflection groups, if some property is true, then it should also be true for the whole thing. Okay. That's speculative, but it's an indirect connection between this question and something with the Drinfeld double that might give it some access. It is a fact that any element of finite order in any Coxeter group is strongly real. So that allows you to say something about these characters where you have complex numbers appearing in the centralizer. So when you have such a thing happen, where the element comes from in the overlying Coxeter group must be an element of infinite order. Okay. So that's an interesting property of those characters. You just have to... Yeah? Yes? It can be infinite. Yeah. No, it won't be. Yeah. It won't be. Well, it won't, not because the strongly real property applies to all elements. And if you have an element of infinite order, then it doesn't have to be congruent to its inverse on involution. It still might not be when you take its image. But if elements of finite order, if they're finite order originally, then you don't have to worry about them. They'll have real character values. Okay, now our result, Barry and I showed that if you take McMullen's revised formula, so this is what this is, you sum okay, so this is actually R plus 1. The 1 comes from the fact that the trivial character in the character theory is giving you a 1, but in the McMullen's setup it gives you a 0, so you have to add 1. So this is the set of all pairs of double coset and their inverse unions, okay? And W star, well, W chi is the index of it's the multiplicity of your irreducible character, your given irreducible character chi, in the permutation character induced from the trivial character on your vertex stabilizer, okay, in your gamma zero. And the star is this multiplicity, but you have to divide it by the dimension of your division algebra over the base field you're working on. So it can be a 1 or 2 or a 4 in the real case. Okay? So that's what Monson and McMullen's interpretation is for this count. But Frame's formula says for any group G, for any H subgroup of a finite group G, the same corresponding number, so the number of unions of double cosets with the coset, double coset represented by the inverse of the element, so instead of a 1, you replace it by the Frobenius-Schur indicator, which could be negative 1 or 0. And instead of this multiplicity, you just have the multiplicity of chi in the induced character itself. Okay. When you compare these formulas, it implies that when the Frobenius-Schur indicator is 0 or negative 1, the contribution, so the contribution when the Frobenius-Schur indicator is 1 is the same, so those just cancel, but the contribution here is is being lessened. Here it's being increased, and it doesn't balance out unless this W chi star is 0 or 1. But this is the dimension of the essential Witthoff space in the realization cone. So what this says is that the existence of such characters isn't going to complicate the structure of the realization cone because everything's being squished to one dimension. Okay? You don't have any quaternion algebra really contributing anything interesting to the geometry. So there's no barrier to these characters existing. We just haven't found them yet. Okay, and I'll stop there.